Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Dr. Ansari's Human Rights Updates. This is a program on the Human Rights Demand Blog Talk Radio channel. We make a demand for human rights for all people, every man, woman, boy, and girl on planet Earth has certain human rights that should not and must not be violated. So, Dr. Mustafa Ansari is an international human rights attorney. He is also Dean of the American Institute for Human Rights, and we welcome him right now to his show, which is Dr. Ansari's Human Rights Reports. I want you to know that you can call in and you can speak to Dr. Ansari. You can actually comment on his show or ask questions. You can dial 347-857-3293. Again, the guest call-in number is 347-857-3293. Dr. Ansari is on Human Rights Demand Channel with his Dr. Ansari's Human Rights Reports every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Eastern Daylight Time, whatever 1 o'clock p.m. is on the East Coast, whatever time that is in your area, please check and join us every Tuesday. Also, please get the link after the show and help spread the word. Help carry Dr. Ansari's messages to your online communities, to your online network, because we often talk about the issues that face people in America and throughout the world, but this is a rare opportunity. This is an opportunity to hear directly from an international human rights attorney. So this is a very rare and blessed opportunity, and you don't want your friends, your relatives, and your online communities to miss it, and they don't have to miss it, because if you simply grab the link, you can share this with all of your groups so that they can learn from Dr. Ansari's Human Rights Reports. And now I bring you Dr. Ansari. How are you today, Dr. Ansari?
I'm fine, Mary. I'm fine. How are you?
I am doing very well, sir. I understand that we lost a mentally ill veteran in Rikers Island Prison in February, just now hitting mainstream news. AP informed his family about his death 3 weeks after he died. And his name is Jerome Murdoch, and he was arrested apparently when he was trying to seek shelter from the harsh winter conditions in New York in February. I think he was arrested for trespassing and vagrancy, which are common so-called offenses of the homeless. And he was taken to Rikers Island Prison. He was put in, first he was in a holding cell for some time, some days, but eventually he was put into a solitary confinement in a solitary prison cell, which is about, 8 feet by 6 feet, cedar block. And the heat was turned up in his cell for some reason, and the man literally, AP uses the term baked to death. He was baked, slow baked, roasted, if you will, and he died. AP, as I said, reported his death to his family because no New York officials or prison officials had contacted his family. And you said that you might want to speak on that today, so I gave that little brief summary.
Well, I thank you. Yes, there's a there's a well-known concept in human rights law that every human being is a special human being. And the state is especially engaged to care for and to make sure that that human being, regardless of class, race, color, mental state, is entitled to the highest degree of dignity. And in this case, there is a convention, and I think that you would really like to know this, Mary, because you are foremost in the realm of human rights defenders of the mentally handicapped and mentally challenged. And there is a convention on the rights of persons with disabilities. And the convention is the convention itself. What the convention endeavors to do, Mary, is said Adam McKay, who's the chairman of the committee that negotiated the treaty, is to elaborate in detail the rights of persons with disabilities and set out a code of implementation. So in your studies and in your hopefully upcoming human rights practice in providing representation for the mentally ill, you will know that there by this convention that your clients will have the full rights and privileges of all other citizens. And what this convention goes on to say, as it wants to change the perceptions and essentially improve the situations of persons with disabilities. Ratifying countries are to combat stereotypes and prejudices and promote awareness of the capabilities of persons with disabilities. This is Article 6. Countries are to guarantee that persons with disabilities enjoy the inherent right to life on an equal basis with others, ensure that equal rights and advancement of women and girls with disabilities, Article 6, and protect children with disabilities. And it goes on further to know their protections for children, that children with disabilities shall have equal rights and shall not be separated from their parents against their will, except when the authorities determine that this is in the child's best interest, and in no case shall be separated from their parents on the basis of the disability of either the child or the parent. This goes on further to put down a full array of rights and obligations of countries. Countries are to ensure the equal right to own and inherit property, to control financial affairs, and to have equal access to bank loans, credit, and mortgages. These are people with disabilities shall have the right to own and inherit property. And this has been sometimes relatives or guardians take advantage of people who have some type of disability, and this clarifies, and the state has, but this further clarifies that they shall have an equal right without infringement to own and inherit property, to control their financial affairs, to have equal access to justice on an equal basis with others, and to make sure that persons with disabilities enjoy the right to liberty and security and are not deprived of their liberty unlawfully or arbitrarily. And countries must protect the physical and mental integrity of persons with disabilities. And in this case, in Rikers, Mary, you just gave us some facts on, and I'm sure you're aware of different instances around the country in which the state has, through negligence or through stereotyping or some type of not paying attention to their duties to mentally challenged people, have violated one or more of these considerations that go into the UN Convention. And in my first observation, actually, Mary, when you being a mentally challenged person is not a crime, so I'm not sure what was the excuse for the arrest. In any case, whether it was as we talked, before, that sometimes mentally challenged people, they commonly get charged or ticketed for vagrancy or drunk in public, and they may not be a drunk or in public, they may just be physically mentally challenged, and so on, and those types of crimes. Not crimes. In fact, that's what I'm really trying to emphasize, that these are not crimes, mentally challenged. And that is like a threshold issue of why did you arrest the person in the first place? And in my perception of how this should go is that police officers and all people that are concerned with public safety should have training so that they'll understand how to better deal with people who are mentally challenged or physically challenged. But yes, Marianne, I know you're glad to hear this, the news of this convention and what it entails.
I certainly am glad. If that convention was not just laws on paper, that if it is really enforced, I can see how that convention alone would greatly improve the lives of the mentally ill people in America, people who suffer with serious mental illness like Jerome Murdoch, who had schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, which are two of the most pronounced and serious mental illnesses. I could see where it would greatly improve their lives and the lives of their family members. Because whenever a person is criminalized for a common treatable health condition like mental illness, they're not suffering alone, but their parents, their families are also suffering with them on account of that untreated mental illness. And we know, Dr. Ansari, that the mentally ill can also, especially the ones who have very serious mental illness, very often they suffer from a condition that makes it impossible for them to recognize their own mental health needs. I want to ask you about that from a human rights standpoint, because this is a big issue that is a point of contention between deferring organizations that address mental health. And I want to know, and you know, you could answer it now or later, what are the human rights, what is the standpoint regarding enforced psychiatric treatment? And let me say that I favor enforced psychiatric treatment for individuals who have proven themselves to be mentally ill and who have put themselves and others in danger because of their mental illness, yet they refuse treatment. In those cases, I favor enforced psychiatric treatment. And also there's a program called Assisted Outpatient Treatment. And assisted outpatient treatment is their programs where the mentally ill, people with serious mental illness, such as those who are exiting mental hospitals and are exiting jails and prisons, they would be put in an AOT program that mandates, in other words, it would be a part of their release, that they would be mandated to continue their psychiatric treatment. And they would also be given the subsistence needed for their housing and food. So with AOT programs, Dr. Ansari, they have been proven to reduce homelessness, incarceration, arrest, and future hospitalizations by over 85% among the participants in the program when compared with 3 years before they got in an AOT program. So these AOT programs are ordered by the court for mentally ill people who are exiting prisons and hospitals. And I just want to know, you know, because there are groups who are really against any enforced psychiatric treatment. And I just want to ask you, what is the standpoint of human rights law regarding enforced treatment?
Well, good question, and I'm so glad that you are so well rounded in the nuances of what could happen and what is happening and the conduct that needs to be addressed. And let me tell you this: when you first addressed this, you said, "Well, we have the Convention on Disabilities, but it's on paper. What can be done to enforce it?" And then you asked a couple other questions about enforcing in regards to forced medication treatment and the out-resident program. And these are all excellent questions, and these are questions that someone who has the energy, the intelligence, the understanding of the law, the understanding of human rights law, who's a human rights defender, who understands the conventions on disability, who has the ability to convince the authorities by negotiation, arbitration, or litigation that the program such as the out resident program should be a program that is nationalized because of its effect. And that two, that state officials, police officials, should be thoroughly trained in their understanding of this convention and should be resensitized to people who have mental challenges, and the state legislatures should be gone in front of and explain to them that there needs to be legislation that decriminalizes some of the conduct that police have and there should be mandated a series of checklists of strategies to when confronted with a citizen who happens to be challenged physically or either mentally. So in summation, it is going to be up to people like you and other people from around the country who are interested in this issue and that you can inform that we have a convention that the United States is obligated to follow in regards to people with disabilities and we need to make them aware, the federal government and the state government, that we want expanded attention in this area in regards to legislation as well as programming. So what international law does, as well as any other type of law, but really in international law, it is people that have this type of understanding that will force the and negotiate and convince the states and their agencies that there has to be a different way to do this under the convention that conforms to the convention, and these are the types of programs that make it work. So it's going to be up to the defenders and the lawyers and the activists with knowledge of the convention and how people with disabilities should be treated. We'll, those are the people that we have to look toward those who will make the difference.
Well, thank you. That's excellent information, Dr. Ansari, because there are those like myself who believe that a person's need for mental health care overrides their personal liberty to choose not to be treated. Because truly I say to you that there are people whose mental illness is so pronounced without treatment that jail is their only option. Jail, of course, in New York City, where Jerome Murdaugh perished, cost taxpayers $168,000 per year per inmate. So it is an issue that not only affects the mentally ill, but it affects everyone, even people who don't have any respect for other human beings from a human rights standpoint. It affects people financially to use jails and prisons instead of instituting outpatient treatment programs. It's much less expensive if people are treated in outpatient treatment programs that provide housing, food for those who are financially needy, and also continuous psychiatric care. And so I really appreciate your response to that. And there are those who make it a human rights issue whether or not individuals, human beings, whether or not their individual right to choose whether to be treated or not treated overrides society's responsibility to treat people even who don't recognize that they need treatment. But I say to you that when mentally ill people like Mr. Murdaugh, who may have rejected no health care, go to prison and oftentimes are brutalized or killed in prison, and his death, as horrible as it was, is not is not something that doesn't happen with regularity. So when these people are in prison in brutal circumstances and kept in torturous solitary confinement for long periods of time, some of them for years and some for decades, are those people who fought for their right to reject mental health care are nowhere around. They are treated in jail, in prisons, for their mental illness, whether they want to be treated or not. So those people who would say that it's wrong to treat people, whether they want to or not, they don't seem to have that same concern once an individual is incarcerated. So the situation I'm putting forward is that if that person is released from jail on probation, then they're still basically in custody, and they should, in most cases, be allowed to be mandated into treatment as a part of their probation. Yeah. You know, so I don't think that that would violate their human right to say no to treatment they don't want.
That is a precarious ledge when balancing that between a person's free will and right to choose as opposed to someone who's incapable to choose, and so now the state has to interfere and with his right to choose. And there are some circumstances. Mental health is not an easy subject. But let me tell you this, Baron, you already know this. The United States has one of the worst criminal justice systems and prison systems and ideas of how to deal with people who they deem to be problematic in the society, people who they deem to be criminal, or people who they deem to be easily disposable, like vulnerable people, people who are poor, people who have are minority African Americans. The United States has one of the worst law and order cowboy-ish archaic ways to deal with its society and its citizenry. When we look at outpatient programs, when we look at non-custodial programs, we see that there's not that many. But when we look at the United States as being the leading country on having the most jails and having the most prisons, or having the most people in a society locked up, we see that its approach, and the United States knows this. They know that their approach has been wrong, and they spend an inordinate amount of money on to keep people in custody. And like you said, with the million handicap, you know, you said 68,000. I know that it's over or close to $40,000 a year to keep a prison inmate in jail, and it's much less than that per year to educate in a college, to have a good college education. It's less than $36,000 to $40,000 per year, and surely less than $68,000 per year. So we know that everyone in criminal justice knows this, but so there has to be advocates, because the advocacy is against the people who are making money because of the custodial measures of prisons and the money that's generated through the guard associations and the guard unions and those who are making money off the prisons for profits, and we know all those industries. This is a huge battle that is across all of the lines of the citizenry, from those who are mentally and physically challenged to those who are in those vulnerable classes of people that the United States deals with in such ways. And you know the statistics on police brutality and how police arrest people and put civilians and track people and profile people. This is the challenge for human rights defenders, because the lawyers are not doing a good job. They're going along with it one way or another, except for maybe they may have an individual client that they may give a good defense for. But the most part, the fact that the client had been brutalized or in some ways is not a subject and a judge that the judge takes into consideration, or criminal justice society takes into consideration as someone who has been violated, his rights have been violated. So it continues. So the ones that are necessary to do this and to bring it to the state's attention through negotiation, arbitration, or litigation in the international forums will be the human rights defenders and the human rights lawyers. They're the only ones in this society that's suited to this, because everyone else has a stock interest in keeping the people, the prisoners, and the people who are challenged into custodial.
Excuse me, Dr. Sorry, I want to say to everyone that you might be cut off if you're listening by computer right now, but please come back, because we'll be on another 15 minutes, and you don't want to miss the question and answer session. Thank you very much for joining us on Human Rights Demand, Dr. Ansari's reports. Go ahead, Dr. Ansari.
Thank you so much, Mary. I wanted to also say this on the air, and I was going to say this to you as well off the air, was that after we're teaching people and lawyers and judges how to incorporate human rights into these legal issues that in the United States that have attachments to treaties and conventions. And after this particular round of study, Mary, there's a international diploma I just became aware of on mental health law and human rights.
Wonderful.
And an international, if it's a 1-year program in India that can be done online for the most part. They say there may be some sessions that you may have to attend, but But it's a one-year degree after a diploma after this Human Rights Defender Program that would confirm you as an expert in this area. You surely have been active in this area of mental health, the treatment of those who are mentally and physically challenged, as well as all other members of the vulnerable members of the society. So I was just suggesting that as an additional course of study that would make it unassailable for anyone in state legislature or federal legislature to not take you and this point seriously about people who have mental and physical challenges. So that's just another thing that can and should be done.
Well, thank you for that information, Dr. Ansari, and for all of your information that you impart to us on your human rights updates. We really appreciate you taking time out of your busy day. We know that you are, your law firm is involved in the Bosnia victims' reparations and other human rights matters, and of course you are preparing your classes for the American Institute of Human Rights, where you will train individuals, including lawyers, judges, and laypersons in human rights law through the American Institute for Human Rights. And I congratulate you on that, and I congratulate us all because you're doing that.
Yes.
And so this is just really needed, and it's so timely because we must avoid deaths like this Jerome Murdaugh suffered. And the only way to avoid such tragedies is to better assess the needs of such people and address those needs. I want to invite you and everyone to look at articles in my Dog Justice for Mentally Ill blog. The article that I was working on before Jerome Murdaugh passed away, or before we knew he had, because as I said, he's been dead for weeks, and the public did not know, and neither did his family know, because neither did the New York officials or the prison officials see fit to inform the public or his family that he was dead. That was done by AP, Associated Press, weeks after he passed away. And I suspect, this is my personal suspicion, that there was a cover-up underway regarding his murder, as there was regarding the wrongful death of Larry Neal. But I've worked on some articles before then about the AP, association, this American Psychological Association, that's APA. They did some studies, Dr. Ansari, that proved that Caucasians do not perceive our black boys, and I mean juveniles, as being as innocent, even at early ages, like 10 years old. They do not perceive black boys as being innocent. They see them as older, as much as 4.5 years older than their actual age, and they also see them as being more guilty. Now, this has been proved through psychological research through the American Psychological Association. Also, another study dealing with discipline in schools proved that black boys are disciplined much harsher than their peers who are Caucasians. And so these are not just things that we say anymore, and we thank the sponsors of these psychological research studies, because it has been proved that black boys are punished much more harshly for the same offenses than white children, white boys are. And then thirdly, the study showed that black boys will, who are categorized, whether they have it or not, with mental disorders, are punished more harshly than any other group, black boys with psychological disabilities. police officers are going into the schools and tasering our children, handcuffing them, and taking them to jail. And their expulsion rate is 36% regarding children, boys, particularly black boys with mental illness. Their expulsion rate is 36% of the black children with mental illness or categorized with mental illness have great propensity to be expelled from school, which we know is an indicator of future dropout rates and also future arrests. So I just ask everybody to look at the article in Dog Justice for Mentally Ill blog and see that the problem associated with our mentally ill people, especially the ones who are black, goes all the way back to their childhood regarding corrections and regarding their discipline. It's necessarily more harsh than it is for white children with those same conditions. You have a caller, Dr. And sorry, I wanted to let you know that because your caller might have a question or comment, and we are down to less than 10 minutes.
Okay. We could let me answer that real quick, and then we can bring the caller in. Thank you, caller. Mary, you know that my main strategy for African American people in the United States is to move for self-determination, because all of those factors on more harsh and more excessive treatment and punishment all across the board has been occurring in the United States with us ever since we have been under their authority. So, and there's no change, there's no reform measures, there's none of that can help. All of it has been discussed and debated, and the customary notions on race are so deeply entrenched that it is impossible to make it better through legislation. Make it better through legislation. So the best thing to do at this point is for the African Americans to seek their indigenous right, their human right, to self-determination, so that they can be in control of their own school systems, they can teach their own children, can be in control of their own criminal justice system. When there's a problem or a crime in the community, it can be solved within those communities or within jails or prisons if necessary, but it has to be meted out by African American people, because every time and in every instance that is given to the white authority to do that in the cases of Africans or people that are poor and other things, it is a system of injustice that cannot be remedied. So that's my summation on that. And I'm waiting to talk with the caller.
All right, thank you, Dr. Ansari. I appreciate your input on that regarding African Americans. And I just want to say that Jerome Murdoch was also an African-American, the man who was baked to death at Rikers Island Jail. Caller 7019, welcome to Dr. Ansari's Human Rights Reports. How are you today?
I'm great, Mary. This is Elizabeth Gaskins from Illinois.
Hello there, Elizabeth Gaskins from Illinois. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Ansari?
I'd like for a team to about the international human rights demand on that. Where is that going to be located, that conference?
Well, it's not a conference, it's a class. Go right ahead, Dr. Ansari, and explain the class to Ms. Elizabeth Gaskins.
Okay. Well, the...
And by the way, Elizabeth Gaskins is an elder in the Native American community. She's an elder for the Cherokees.
Oh, excellent. I have Native American in my background. I think Ms. Alaskan was referring to the United Nations Convention, and if that's correct, the convention was was among all of the states of the world, and they all agreed and put together a convention protecting the rights of people with disabilities. Now we have a class that teaches, and if that's what you're referring to, we have a class that teaches human rights monitors and human rights defenders how to defend a people's human rights, and in this case would be how to protect an indigenous group's human rights, and that could run the gamut of everything from sovereignty rights and resource rights, all the way to the treatment of mentally challenged and mentally physical. And the disparities for people who are physically disabled. So human rights runs the full gamut. Did I get your question? I hope I answered your question.
Well, I'm wanting to know when is that going to take place, your classes, the American Institute?
Thank you. In the next 6 days, registration will start. I just talked with the technical. It's going to be on WizIQ. The link will be up in about 6 days. They told me it'll be 5 to 6 days, and the classes can be started as soon as the link is up. You can enroll, and the class will start in about 2 days after the enrollment.
Doctor, I'm sorry. Are you going to have admins in each state working with you in each state in the United States, or is that going to be global, international, nationally, Ren?
Well, we're going to have our administration is here in Atlanta, Georgia, and we will be we'll be having a subsequent outpost in Dubai. That's in the Emirates. But it would be centrally located here in Atlanta, Georgia, and it would be available to everyone, not only nationwide, but worldwide, because this is a human right, so it deals with all the states of the world.
The classes will be offered online, Elizabeth.
Okay. Yeah, I was writing that down as he was speaking. I'm thankful to have you, Doctor. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm very interested in the disability rights, hidden disabilities in the Department of Corrections, criminal justice system, like you were saying, all correct.
Excellent.
We have a very
Excellent.
Poor mismanagement of our criminal justice system in the United States, and we have so many indigenous people here that are being unconstitutionally violated each day, murdered. It's just unbecoming for our government to continue to allow this pattern of abuse. Myself, I'm a pro se litigator. I do pro se law. I have now for 20 years. So I'm not a licensed attorney, never will be. I don't want to be a licensed attorney. I'm not under law, not substantial.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe I want to interject that
Elizabeth Gaskins, who is an elder of the Cherokee people, has a show here, Dr. Ansari, and everyone on Human Rights Demand. What day is your day, Elizabeth? Is it Friday?
It's Wednesdays.
Wednesday.